This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. So, the only thing left to say is, you win? Order now on the McDonald's app, and you can also get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus, rewards registration required. Points only on menu items. Delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Hello and welcome to Wetmore Kings Meadow, the show that follows the title-chasing Chelsea FC women's team. Now, after a shock midweek defeat to Liverpool, Chelsea woke up on Sunday morning knowing that the title was as good as gone. The day instead was to be a celebration of Maren Mielder, Frank Kirby and Emma Hayes. That was until Stina Blackstenius got involved. Two injury time goals rocked Manchester City, with Lauren James commentating on it all for Emma Hayes and Denise Redding sat parked outside Fat Boys Caf. The goals opened the door to Chelsea, who needed to score big against already relegated Bristol City. 2-0 at half-time quickly became 3, then 4, then 5, then 6, then 7 and finally 8, meaning Chelsea sit 3 points behind City with a game in hand and, more importantly, a +1 goal difference to their title rivals. As Emma Hayes so eloquently said, it's not fucking over. And the title of tonight's show is Wetmore Kings Meadow, episode number 105, It's Not Fucking Over. Which is great, because the last show that we didn't do was going to be called They Think It's All Over, which just shows how quickly things can change in football. Now, it's not just me you're hosting. I am joined tonight by Sophie Spittle. Sophie, good to see you again.
Excuse me, sorry, evening. Good to see you too.
Yeah, and Mr. Rich Bakes. Rich, good to see you, mate.
Yeah, good to see you as well, Dee. And Sophie again.
Yeah, good. Good weekend of football for Chelsea, not just the women, of course. The men scoring 5 goals, believe it or not. I know, shocking for everyone involved, especially those of you that saw both games. I know Rich and Sophie would have done as well. Just the 8 goals for me, but that's good enough, I suppose. Now, on the show tonight, in part one, we're going to look back at the 8-0 win over Bristol City, and in part two, we'll pay our own tributes to Maren Mielder, Frank Kirby and Emma Hayes as they finish their final home games for the club. Now, remember, you can listen to the show live every Tuesday and the occasional Friday at 8 p.m. by heading to Mixlr, mixlr.com, and searching for Wetmore Kings Meadow. And you can join in the show by posting on the live chat page, as Johnny already has this evening. Good to see Johnny, who's going to be on the show soon as well, just to sort out when. But yeah, that will be good. And if you are listening back on Apple or Spotify, please do leave us a nice 5-star review, as it makes us feel very nice about what we do. And we're going to get into all the action shortly after this.
Just a champion!
like them, Chelsea lining up for this one in a 4-3-3 formation with Satira Musovic in goal. The back four of Yves Perisset, Millie Bright, Nathalie Bjorn and Neve Charles. The midfield three were Sophie Ingle, Aaron Cuthbert and Jerkan Liskin, with Michael Hermano, Guru Wright and Aggie Beaver-Jones up front. Emma Hayes made all five substitutions, bringing on Frank Kirby for Nissan at half-time, Johanna Ritten-Carradine, Kat Macario for Perisset and Ingle in the 63rd minute. Mary Milner made her final King's Meadow appearance for Chelsea in the 82nd minute, replacing Bjorn. And then Ashley Lawrence replaced Aggie Beaver-Jones in injury time. That left Hannah Hampton, Jess Carter, Melanie Leupolds and Khadija Buchanan unused subs. Stats-wise, Chelsea with 70% possession to Bristol's 30. 30 shots, 12 on target to Bristol's 11 shots, 3 on target. Chelsea with 7 corners, Bristol with none. And then 5 fouls for Chelsea to Bristol's 10. And now, Sophie, the first thought I had when I saw the lineup was that it was picked well before Man City had lost to Arsenal.
Yeah, definitely. I think Emma confirmed that, didn't she? She said that she'd sort of prepped the day before and she wasn't going to change anything after that prep. So, yeah, it makes sense. I don't think you can change things around that quickly. You stick with what you've got unless anybody gets injured. And that team, if that team couldn't have beaten Bristol, not saying score 8 goals, but if that team couldn't have beaten Bristol, then we had bigger issues than losing the WSL, really, didn't we? So,
yeah, that is true. And just a mention, Rich, for Sophie Ingle, who would have been in Emma Hayes' first home lineup and also the last, and just a tribute to her longevity in her career.
Yeah, and I think she definitely sort of stabilised the midfield, and I think we could have potentially used her in more situations this season, actually. There's definitely patches of games where we've looked a bit sort of, I guess, sort of rockier on the counter-attack, where maybe having her there may have helped out at times. But yeah, obviously she spent some time away after the first appearance, but then came back, had the wise, you know, had the wise head to come back to Chelsea. But yeah, she's been a terrific servant of the club.
It's a bit like the fishing trip on Gavin and Stacey. You know, we just don't mention Sophie's time away. Almost sounds like she was in prison. Not sure if it was like that for her, but you know, I would feel like that if I moved to Liverpool. Sophie, the mission, I suppose, was pretty simple. Score goals. And I thought, actually, the team started very well.
Yeah, they did. And we'll probably come on to it a bit more later, but they were clearly determined to score goals, because as soon as the penalty went in, Guru picked the ball up and ran back to the centre circle and put it down on the floor, keen to get on with it. And actually, to be fair, they did the same thing at Liverpool when they actually scored the goals at Liverpool. They immediately picked them up and went and put it back down in the centre circle. So it's clearly something they've thought on and they worked on, and they know what they need to do to quicken the game up and get the game moving again to score as many goals as possible.
Yeah, I mean, Rich, I thought that penalty came, you know, I know it was only 5 minutes, but you know, a good moment for us, you know, stopped us getting frustrated. I mean, Bristol City had stopped Man City for over an hour the previous week. I don't know if you saw on Sky Sports, they tried debating whether or not it was outside the box and then showed a picture where the defender's standing in the box.
Well, I mean, I think the rule is if the foul's on the line, it counts as in the box, no matter how little of the line it is. So, yeah, it was a cast iron penalty. I think it was Jasmine Ball gave it away. And that isn't the only time that she gave away a goal to Neve Charles in this game. But there, yeah, Guru, fantastic, you know, cold, calm and collected penalty right in the corner. Keeper went that right side, but the penalty was so accurate that she didn't really have a chance.
Yeah, I don't watch penalties live when I'm at the game, so I've turned around and faced the other way. Did get to see it. Someone had filmed it just behind the goal, so did get to see it pretty soon after. But, you know, a little tradition of mine is not to watch penalties, and it works out well. So if you thought, you know, Neve winning the penalty is something we don't see enough of from her, you know, all the time, is her getting forward and making those runs. Because when she does, she can be very dangerous.
Yeah, I said to person stood next to me, sort of halfway through the first half, it was good to see the Neve Charles Guru Wrighton link up working so well on the left-hand side. something we haven't seen a lot of this season for a variety of reasons. Obviously, Neve's been there, but not necessarily Guru. And it felt like they'd never been not playing that way this season. The space they were finding, the movement they had, it was just too much for Bristol. They couldn't cope with it. And yeah, it was a clear penalty. I mean, I could see it from the other end of the pitch. I mean, Neve Charles ended up like 5 foot in the air or something stupid like that. So yeah, it was definite pen and well taken. And as I say, the interplay between Guru and Neve was back to where it had been, which was quite surprising to see so soon into the game.
Yeah, I do love 4-3-3 with wingers, you know, and overlapping fullbacks. I just think it works really well, especially for Chelsea. And I think the only way that wasn't a penalty if it was Ramirez, because she just doesn't get given penalties. But lucky for us, it was Neve. We were, though, Rich, for some reason, wide open at the back. And Jamie Lee Napier in particular was finding a lot of space between Millie Bright and Perisse on that left-hand side for Bristol. And, you know, they looked like Brazil in midfield, but Norwich up front. And I think that sort of helped us out by not being punished.
Someone did make a comment in the crowd before the game started. Actually, it might have been Johnny who was sitting next to me. Our mutual friend, Johnny. He said that we were playing Norwich today. Perisse, the first half wasn't great. I mean, Emma didn't take her off until the 63rd minute. I thought she might have come off at half time because she was leaving a lot of space in behind. And it could also be a combination of the fact that Millie hasn't played, you know, 90 minutes. I mean, it's only her second start since November. So there could be just a chemistry thing there where they just kind of just didn't get it right. I don't think it was as much of a problem, you know, obviously later in the game. But definitely sort of concerning to see them, you know, getting, you know, down our side so often. And, you know, they obviously at this stage, they have nothing to play for. So they could kind of just go for it. And I mean, fortunately, we didn't get punished for it.
Yeah, Misovic, with a good save. I think one of the only ones she really had to make, where she sort of clawed it away after it bounced around the area a little bit. And then we get the second goal, obviously comes after 22 minutes, Chelsea scoring from a corner, not conceded, which is good to see. Nusken poking home after the ball sort of landed behind Fran Bentley just on the line. And so, when we look back at the end of the season over, what made the difference, you know, Nusken's instinct in the box and her goal contributions are going to play a huge part.
Yeah, definitely. Just a point about that goal. I think it's one of the only times in my football supporting career that I've had to wait for the crowd at the other end of the ground to cheer before I could actually cheer, because we just couldn't see what was going on. So we're watching, and then the crowd cheered, and then our end cheered. I know you can just about hear it on TV. There's a little bit of a delay between the two sets of cheers. It amused me at the time. It still amuses me now, actually. But yeah, no, Nusken has been a revelation, I think. I wasn't expecting this level of attack-mindedness and goal-scoring ability when she signed. I was thinking we were going to get a defensive midfielder, and she's proven to be a defensive midfielder plus. She's a number 8, she's a number 10, she's a number 5, she's a number 4, she's a number 6. Pretty much any position on the park, I think, you could probably play her. And she's even played number 9, hasn't she? And she'll do a job. I mean, what a brilliant signing. Be interesting to see where she eventually settles down. I think probably a number 8. But obviously, it won't be Emma that decides that. It'll be the new manager, whoever that may be. So, yeah, it'll be interesting to see where she ends up playing in a more longer term frame, period of time. Because I think it's a shame, actually, because if Emma was staying, I think we'd see more of the chaos. But I think we probably will see less of the chaos without Emma there.
Yeah, one of the signings of the season for me, Nusken, as we'll discuss when we do our end of season show in a few weeks' time. And then, Rich, you know, it was lots of sort of huffing and puffing, Chelsea doing some good work, but no goals. And what was frustrating me was the amount of times that they tried to cross the ball in towards Hermano.
Yeah, you'd like, you know, to, you know, to play to Hermano's strengths. At the moment, I don't think heading's one of them. But yeah, I think towards the end of that first half, Aggie nearly scored the overhead kick. So I guess that was like the next chance after that. But yeah, they did. I think they did kind of. Maybe they were kind of rushing it a little bit. They were leaving themselves a bit open. I was kind of happy to get to half time at 2-0 at that stage, and just to maybe for Emma to just say at half time, look, chill out a little bit. But yeah, a little bit wasteful towards the end of the first half. But luckily, it looks like it got corrected in the second half.
Yeah, I mean, certainly Rich mentioned Perisic maybe coming off at half-time. And it's something that I tweeted as well at half-time. Thought we might switch to the 3-5-2 that we had seen with Cameron coming on as a wing-back for her. But it was just Kirby on for Nusken. I don't know if she had picked up a knock at all. She did get changed straight away and came out later for the second half. But I thought the introduction of Kirby worked really well and her picking the ball up in those spaces that Bristol left open. Really helped our attack in the second half.
Yeah, definitely. I don't know if Nusken was injured, but I think it's probably a tactical switch to build that play that Fran does so well. Pick those balls up, create the space, find the passes. I noticed that I think three out of five goals that we scored, or three out of how many goals it was we scored in the second half, maybe four, Fran had the pass before the assist. So even though she might not have had the assist for any or many of them, she was definitely instrumental in creating those goals, which is what seemingly now she does best. She had a couple of chances that I think those of us in the South End tried to suck into the net, but just wasn't happening. But I think, yeah, she definitely made a difference. She played balls that Nusken isn't able to play because no one apart from Fran can play those balls, and it definitely gave us a bit more attacking impetus on the pitch in a different way to what Nusken does.
Yeah, I think her performance deserved a goal, especially her last game at King's Meadow, just not to be. Obviously, Fran Bentley saving a good shot from her best chance probably to score. But the third goal, Rich, belongs entirely, in my opinion, to Aggie Beaver-Jones, who picked the ball up out wide, played a little 1-2 with Erin Cuthbert, and then slotted the ball under Fran Bentley. And I thought Aggie led the line, excellently, as there was a lot of sort of responsibility on her shoulders given what happened in the Man City game and Chelsea's need to score. For her to play as the nine and really play really well was very important for us.
Yeah, and I mean we've lost Kerr, we then lost Fischl, we then brought Ramirez in, to help out, and she's now injured, and then Lauren got injured at some point after or during Barcelona. So basically, Aggie is. I don't know whether she would have been exactly fifth choice at this stage, but that's kind of how it's fallen, and I mean, she's wildly smashed my expectations for the season. I did not see her getting double-digit goals in the league at the start of the season. She's been a revelation, and it's great when youth players come through the club. But yeah, that's a phenomenal return. She's on 11 at the moment, and it could be more before the end of the season. Yeah, and this goal, really well worked move. As you say, 1-2 between her and Erin, and yeah, cool, calm, and collected finish in the box. Yeah, she's been fantastic this season.
Yeah, she has to be called up for England in the summer.
Very much interview with her again.
Yeah. And the fourth goal, Sophie, is what we've missed from, I think, Nathalie Bjorn, who was back in the side, obviously, after being injured. Those passes she can play through midfield into that space. She found Gurruyten, who obviously picked up the ball, drove towards the box, and then smashed it in the bottom corner. And that really reminded me of Guru of last season, grabbing the game by the scruff of the neck. As Rich mentioned, we've lost Sam Kerr, Lauren James, Ramirez, Fischl, all these players. You need players, the big players, to step up, and she did that today, especially, making things happen for us, and something that we've missed from her recently.
Yeah, definitely. It definitely felt like we had the guru of last season back on Sunday. She did take the game by the scruff of the neck. She decided to shoot on sight, and pretty much every shot she had went in. But it wasn't just that; it was her attitude. It was her her determination. She was still crossing the balls as though Sam Kerr was going to come and head them in. And when you've got Aggie and Micah, or maybe Niskan should have been running in, I don't know. It's not going to be quite as successful. But when I think they tweaked that at half time and she started sort of doing more shooting and generating more space for herself, then she became a lot more effective. And yeah, that guru roar was brilliant to see. And somebody said she must have tapped the badge on her shirt about 100 times during the whole game, which is like, yes, that's what we want to see. A little bit of passion from a guru passion. It's brilliant to see.
Yeah, at the end, there was nothing on the badge. It was just a circle. the line had been rubbed off. But the crossing did work, as we'll get on to at the end of the goals. Yeah, but Rich, you know, that's double sub in the 63rd minute that we mentioned. Macario on and was it Cameron on as well at that time? Double check my own notes.
Macario for Sophie, Johanna for Eve.
And that's to the diamond midfield, took Chelsea from third gear to fourth gear. And I thought they felt at that time, before they made the sub, that they could actually get a big score in this game, and it proved to be.
I think that was potentially the switch that Emma were like, 4-0, was like, okay, right, we're really going to go for this now. Because, you know, subbing off a right-back for, you know, someone who's usually like a right-sided midfielder, right-winger in JLK, and taking off a defensive midfield player for someone who's, you know, a forward-thinking player like Macario, that's a switch where she thought, you know, let's go for the kill now. We could make up the goal difference, you know, now, potentially. And yeah, I mean, Kat came on the fifth goal. She plays an absolutely incredible reverse pass. That the Bristol City defence just, you know, they never saw that coming. And then Guru just runs onto it and, you know, smashes it in, completes her hat trick, more badge taps. Very aggressive substitutes, and yeah, they definitely worked out.
Yeah, although I said Perez had come off at half time, when she did come off, it still surprised me. I thought, oh, she's actually going to play Cameron at right back. It worked, and you know, Rich mentions the fifth goal, Sophie. And before Macario's excellent pass, it was Frank Kirby picking the ball up in the pockets of space, you know, from the header from the Bristol defender, as we spoke about. And obviously, you know, the goal goes down to Macario's assist, you know, the first of two in the game. And I think we're starting to see from her a good performance out in Barcelona as well. You know, just how influential she's going to be for us next season.
Yeah, definitely. She just demanded the ball. And when she had the ball, I was talking to people next to me, and she just touches the ball. And this is always the hallmark of a good player, in my opinion. When you take your first touch of the ball and you create space in that first touch of the ball, and she did that pretty much every single time she got the ball. She made a touch into space and then just ran with it and created a forward momentum from that. And that's something that I haven't seen from a Chelsea player for a while. I think Lauren can do it, but she not all the time. She tends to run onto those balls. Whereas Kat gets the ball, finds the space and then charges through it. And it's space of her own making. It was really impressive to see. And yeah, as you're saying, two assists in the game. I think I saw something today, six in the first five or five in the six in the first six matches or something, which is like a record for the WSL, tied with some Aussie that plays for Arsenal. So yeah, it's really impressive. And I think what we saw when she came on, we saw the goals, and that was like when you get a player that's coming back from injury, they're sort of like still running a little bit on adrenaline, and that's what we get. Then she sort of tailed off a bit. Now I think we're seeing what we're going to see more of next season, and it's going to be epic.
Yeah, I can't wait for her to play with, you know, Sam, even a bit more with Ramirez. You know, as a sort of a two, where she's not the number nine, but she's not a number 10 either. Sort of 9.5, perhaps, in between. You know, obviously it's sad to lose Fran, but if that's the replacement, then I think we're going to be okay in that regards. And talking of Macario assists, Rich, the sixth goal comes from her free kick, finding Charles at the back post, who have made, you know, a great run. And her dead ball delivery as well has been something that we've, you know, really excelled at since she's come back into the team. and it takes a lot for someone to just walk in the team and take off set pieces from someone like Guru Wrighton, but with Macario's delivery, you can see why.
Yeah, I think I sort of mentioned before, I do remember when she was playing for Lyon, she was taking the set pieces for Lyon, and, you know, they had, you know, a wealth of talent, an international international experienced players, of course. But yeah, it was a fantastic delivery. Put it into a space. I think the whole plan of that set piece was just to leave Neve isolated with whoever was marking her at the back post, because that was like an area where there was loads of space. And kind of mentioned earlier, Neve beat Jasmine Ball again. Jasmine didn't know where Neve was. It was a lovely lovely half-volleyed finish into the roof of the net. Possibly off her shin. I'm sure her teammates won't have bantered her about that afterwards. But that was second goal in about 4 minutes. And again, another cat assist. And great delivery in.
Yeah, as we've seen this season, it doesn't matter if it comes off your ass, as long as it goes in the net. It's all we care about. And then the seventh goal, Sophie, involved for me the two best players on the pitch. Firstly, Aggie Beaver-Jones, holding the ball up well. And she was under a lot of pressure from the Bristols. I don't know which centre-half it was, but one of them was really tugging and pulling out her all game. And she held the ball up really well. Laid it off her right, and again, sort of similar to her second goal. Or third goal. She scored so many, I forgot which one I'm on now. I think this is her fourth goal. Must be. Another stunning strike into the far corner.
Yeah. Getting my goals mixed up. Yes, no, it was. It was another cracking strike, long distance strike. Absolutely, yeah. Just what you want to see. And again, yeah, Aggie was superb, like she was in the Liverpool game. We didn't get the result we wanted in the Liverpool game, but she really... For me, that was almost like her game where she really stepped on and became a, not that she wasn't fully integrated, but like the proved the level she is at the moment was the Liverpool game. And she just built on that in that game on Sunday, leading the line, doing the dirty work that she does so well, running, picking the ball out of the net, geeing everybody up, running it straight back to the centre circle. She just had a really all-round superb performance. And as you say, someone that's come through academy, her first full season at Chelsea, I don't think she expected to get as many minutes as she's got this season or score as many goals as she has, let alone the rest of us. She's done phenomenally well, and she's got to be up there in conversations for England starts and up there for starting positions under the new manager, definitely.
Yeah, I mean, well, we've spoke about on this show many times, you know, her positive attitude sort of when she's played on the wing. She always wants to beat the defender. This was a different type of performance where she played with her back to goal a lot instead of running in behind, and she did that very well. She would have got my vote for the player of the match poll, which we'll get onto after the last goal. Because, Rich, the two of them combined again for the eighth, this time Kirby again picking that ball up in the space that we've seen for a lot of the goals, as we mentioned, feeding right and down the left, who crossed perfectly for Aggie Beaver-Jones. It was just the perfect height for her to head home. I read 13 goals for her in all. I think that must be all competitions, yeah. if that is right. I didn't double check the stats. Only Lauren James has more goals for Chelsea this season with 16. Carrying on from what Sophie said. Ooh.
I was going to say, only Lauren James has got more goals than her that's an English player in the WSL this season as well.
There you go. It's another reason to be called up for England. There it is. But just following on from what Sophie said about Aggie just then, what a season.
Yeah. She's, as Sophie said, only Lauren scored more goals in the WSL this season. The only English player, who scored more. It's your own team. Yeah, it's really emphasising, those calls that Emma made to get her to the England senior team, because, she's really, she's not knocking at the door. She's like hammering it now. Especially when some of the other wider forwards at the moment for England haven't really had, stellar seasons, but have dropped off recently in terms of their club form. So there definitely should be a place for her in the next England squad. It's senior England squad, and yeah, I've already said it before. She's, you know, completely blown my expectations out of the water. And you know, hopefully she can carry this on into next season. I mean, the different types of finishes she's had as well. You know, that one was a header. You know, she can, you know, score, you know, ones where she's through on goal. She can score screamers with her left foot, right foot. Yeah, she seems to be able to. She's got so many different types of finishes she's got that she could be, you know, she could do even, you know, she could potentially do even better next season. She just seems to, yeah, have a lot or nearly have it all for a young forward player at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, I watched about 85 minutes of Arsenal-Man City before I left for Chelsea, and obviously watched 90 minutes of Chelsea. If you ask me, you know, if someone watched that and it was their first sort of time watching women's football, and you asked them who's England's number nine, I don't think anyone would pick Rousseau. In her performance, she was shocking. And, you know, Aggie's got the confidence, and, you know, when you pick players like that in form, you know, they're going to deliver as she's done. Player of the match poll, an interesting one. We had over 700 votes in this. I picked Hermano, although I don't think she was amazing, but, you know, as someone that's not played much, I thought she did, you know, she gave her all. And I think she looked better when she switched more centrally when Cameron came on. Macario, I thought, changed the game when she came on. So Hermano got 1% of the vote. Macario, just ahead of Kirby because she got the two assists. And I know that's a bit unfair because Kirby got about four pre-assists. But that's how it works. She got 2%. Beaver Jones, who I would have picked, got 6%. And that meant that the winner with 91% was Guru Wrighton. Who, you know, I need one of those. You need to give me one. Blah, blah, blah. I think she does care. You know, winning the player of the match part, I must say. But Sophie, I know sometimes you like to throw a name out there for player of the match. But when you score four, I think, you know, you do have to win these sort of things.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, I think as a club, as a team, we had over 29 shots, but Guru had four shots and four in the back of the net. And she looked, as I say, as we said earlier, she looked like the player she was last season. And that player probably should have won player of the year last year. So, yeah, it was between her and Aggie, but really it wasn't for me. It was Guru every time. She was superb. And as I say, she stood up and, I mean, Millie was back on the pitch as captain, but Guru felt like she stood up and was counted as a senior player on Sunday. Other players have stood up at various times in the season and it felt like Guru did it and it was Guru's turn on Sunday and she did it really well. And that's what we need in the absence of Sam, Myra and Millie in the past. We need players to stand up and players have been doing that in turn to prove that we are a team. We're not just one or two players in the team. So, yeah, Guru for me.
Yeah, I mean, Rich, she really had, you know, the Midas touch. That every shot she took, you know, seemed to go in. And, you know, as Sophie said, you know, she led from the front. And when you've not got those players, we've not got like Lauren James, Sam Kerr and the like, you know, you need somebody to step up. And Sunday was her turn.
It was nice for a finishing to get some positive regression over the season as a whole. Because I feel like she's been getting into positions. It's just that, you know, the last bit in terms of her shooting hasn't been there. I think I've come on and I've kind of defended her when she's played this season because I do see that she's still creating chances for her teammates. But yeah, on Sunday, that's when the finishing clicked. And, you know, that is the Guru that we all saw, you know, all of last season. The finishes were great, especially the second and fourth. The second because of how accurate it was, and the fourth because, you know, she's only hitting that because, you know, she's got the confidence that she scored the three goals beforehand. It was, you know, very instinctive swivel and turn, the fourth one. Yeah, and then she got the, you know, the assist as well. So it's one of the easiest man of the match awards you could possibly give out.
Yeah, as ever, nothing physically given to the players for our player of the match polls, but we do them anyway because I think it's good fun. And all that, Sophie, means that after having given Man City the title on Wednesday, they give it straight back. It's now in our hands. Next week, against Tottenham, obviously the game in hand, which we need to win. I just don't see any way that the team lets this slip now.
Oh, I don't know. yeah, you've got to hope not. You've got to hope the old mentality monsters come out, haven't you? And they just power through the Spurs and the United games and get enough goals so that if we can get enough goals in the Spurs game, that it basically demoralizes City, then that's a bonus. I don't want to have to go to United having to score a number of goals to win the title. But yeah, considering how we all were on Wednesday, walking out of Liverpool, out of Prenton Park, and then the difference in attitude and turnaround to Sunday at King's Meadow was just absolutely phenomenal. And yeah, it's in our hands. We've just got to do what we do at this point in the season and power through and score the goals and keep clean sheets.
Yeah, I mean, Richie, I've got the sense at full time, the sort of the party vibe, and I know the club obviously had the DJ from Stamford Bridge at King's Meadow for this one, so it helped with that party atmosphere. But it just felt like collectively we all knew, given what we had just seen, that they racked up that goal difference in one match, that as Sophie mentioned, the mentality monsters was back in full swing, and key players back like Millie Bright and Bjorn at the back, they all felt, and we felt from them, that they knew it's not theirs yet, but we know that they've done this so many times, they know what to do now in the next two games.
I tweeted before the game about the lineup. I said that I didn't think there were many goals in it. And they shut me up. and the atmosphere around the ground afterwards, and I guess during the game as well, it was a complete contrast to what it was last Wednesday night. Because when the full time whistle went at Prenton Park, it definitely felt like we'd lost it then, like it had gone. And you could tell that it just wasn't just a fan reaction, it was the players' reaction as well. That Hannah Hampton was out on the pitch 15, 20 minutes after the game, just standing in the same spot. Neve came up to the away end because I think her mum and dad were in there, but she was just looking out onto the pitch. Couldn't really sort of speak to anyone face to face. Millie came up as well because her dad was in the away end. But yeah, maybe and Emma's interview as well, It looks like, well, some people think it was my games. I genuinely think she thought it had gone then as well. It's just that, you don't. I didn't expect Arsenal would go to Manchester City and win because their record in big away games in the WSL is horrific under Iderville. And, it was a favour that I didn't expect that they were going to give us. And I don't think that they, and it might have just, The fact that they might have thought that they've lost it and now they're back in it might have actually just eased, it might have just lifted, the tension that was there. They've now been given a second chance, and you've now got 10 days to the next game, which is Spurs away. And by the way, they've got the FA Cup final on Sunday. So do you want Spurs to win it, like the FA Cup final, and potentially still be hungover 3 days later? Because it'll be their first trophy they've ever won. Or do you want them to lose and feel like their season's done and they just, they just play through the game like zombies anyway? isn't there, it feels like there's an opportunity at Spurs to do, to really sort of potentially do the goal difference part of the equation there and then just get a win at Old Trafford. Although Spurs have been pretty good at defending on the whole. They haven't really been giving a lot of big scores up. I think the only time they did was, I think they lost 7-0 at City, but they played us close to the start of the season when we won 2-1 at the Bridge. So, yeah, it felt like it had gone. And then, yeah, by Sunday night, we all, well, I certainly think, okay, well, it's definitely back on now. You know, we've been given a second chance, so you just hope the players can grasp it now.
Yeah, I mean, I hate Man United women and Mark Skinner more than I hate Spurs women. And they've got Bethany England and Drew Spence. So I do think them winning the FA Cup would be better for us and football in general, especially with United looking to finish fifth in the WSL behind Matt Beard's Liverpool, who proved that losing there probably wasn't as terrible as we all felt at the time, although it does have bigger consequences for us at the time. But so for you, just those few days and that few minute spell at the Arsenal City game and the 90 minutes we experienced is why we love the game.
Oh yeah, definitely. I mean, going back to Liverpool and Prenton Park, I don't think we've. I'm not sure if I'm right in saying this, but I don't think we've ever won there. It's a shocking ground for us. So hopefully, when they move to this new rugby league ground, we might be getting a little bit more a bit more luck and maybe a couple of wins there. But yeah, no, that is why you love football. I mean, I saw it as 1-0 City and I gave up, and then I was lucky enough to get a lift from Stamford Bridge down to King's Meadow on Sunday from a friend of a friend. And I was getting all sorts of messages coming through saying, "Have you seen the Arsenal score? Have you seen the Arsenal score?" And I looked at it, it was like 2-1. I was like, "No way, they haven't." And then it finished at that, and I was like, "Oh my God." Suddenly, a day that was going to be a bit of a party, a celebration, a nice relaxed atmosphere, suddenly had a lot more meaning behind it. And it was, yeah, exactly what you go to football for, isn't it? Is those big games and those games that mean something. It's quite nice to go to a game that doesn't mean something, but it's better to go to one that does mean something.
Yeah, I definitely felt that shift outside of King's Meadow, where I was selling copies of King's Meadow Chronicle, which for the first time sold out on match day one, which probably proves everybody feeling a bit happier. And maybe even helped that the club gave away programmes so people weren't spending £2 on one of those. They spent it instead on the fanzine. Now, before we go to a break, a reminder that you can get your subscription for next season's King's Meadow Chronicle by heading to kingsmeadowchronicle.bigcartel.com. It costs £14 plus postage, which is for 7 issues across the season. If you put the code CFCWFanzine in the checkout, you pay £10 plus the postage. So you pay for 5, get 7. It's full of excellent writers, including Sophie, who's on the show tonight, and lots of people have been commenting about how much they enjoy it. So, I would recommend using the code and saving a little bit of money on a subscription, and it helps us continue to spread the gospel of Chelsea women. Interesting to see how that looks next season with all the changes that are going to happen. Yeah, we're going to go for the break now. When we come back, we're going to give our own farewell to Miolda, Kirby and Emma Hayes. We'll be back after this break.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximise your home ground advantage with McDelivery. You in? Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com. When you follow a big team like Chelsea, one of the most frustrating things is not being able to get a ticket for the match, especially when it's away and not live on TV in the UK. What can you do? Get updates from your mates? Follow online commentary? Listen to the radio? Let's face it, it's not the same as actually watching the match live, is it? NordVPN have the solution to every football supporter's match day problems when they can't watch the match live. NordVPN allows us to watch any match, even if it's not on live TV here. With just one click, they switch your virtual location to a country which is showing the match, and they act as your cyber bodyguard whilst online, protecting your personal data and sensitive info like card details and passwords. It's only the price of a cup of coffee per month, and you can use your account across 6 devices. It's a bargain. To get the best discount off your NordVPN plan, go to nordvpn.com/ChelseaFancast. There's no risk with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee, and you'll help support the Chelsea Fancast. The link is in the podcast episode description box.
Welcome back to Wintermo King's Meadow. Time now for some farewells. And obviously, before the game, we all thought this was going to be the highlight of the day. As it turned out, getting the title back, you know, was up there as well. But a very emotional Kings Meadow, as we said, goodbye to Mara Miyada, Frank Kirby and Emma Hayes. And starting with Mara and Sophie, whose presence, I think, is going to be a huge loss for us next season.
Yeah, definitely. If not on the field, definitely off the field. Everybody says what a nice person she is, how she's a bit of a mother hen, how she looks after everybody. A nice, calm head, steadying hand in the dressing room, around the place. You've only got to look at how, when Lauren was injured and Maren was injured at the same time, how she took her under her wing and they became sort of close friends as a result of that. Yeah, a big miss. As I say, maybe not so much on the pitch this season, but definitely off the pitch.
Yeah, she's Jane from the show. Is her favourite player. She was in absolute bits during Marin's bit. Her eyes were bright red. Although Marin did sign her shirt at the end, which I'm sure she will treasure forever. And Rich, I mean, Marin's been involved in so many huge moments. You know, the goal against PSG, for example. And, you know, and also the injury, as Sophie mentioned, you know, was a big part of, you know, that season for us. And she's really embedded in the history of the club and is a legend, in my opinion.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. Yeah, as you say, like for someone who's, you know, played at centre-back, played at, you know, the full-back positions, you don't expect someone like that to be involved in so many sort of huge goals that we've scored. But, you know, yeah, that one against PSG, I, on the morning of her announcement, I dug it out from when the from the club's feed back in 2018, I think, when it happened, and retweeted it. I do always wonder if she hadn't got injured in that Conley Cup final, what would have the result of the Champions League final been? Because, you know, it would have meant that we wouldn't have played both Neve and Jess at fullback in the final. We were sort of fairly inexperienced players. Like, Maren was having a great season, you know, playing at fullback. And I do think it kind of, you know, disrupted, you know, part of the team. I think from my perspective, the two Lyon penalties, you know, really special moments at Stamford Bridge. And yeah, she seemed like a, you know, a lovely person, and, you know, you really wish her well for whatever the next chapter is in her career is.
Yeah, I mean, Sophie, that injury sort of changed the course of her career. I suppose she'd become, you know, a squad player after that. But, you know, there's been so many occasions over those seasons that followed where she stepped in for 4 or 5 game spells and has been absolutely faultless. And, you know, I think back to last season when she stepped in near the end and she was one of our best performers and a real reason why we've been so successful.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, last season was such a classic example of that. As you said, her and Magda both coming back from injury to play at the Nou Camp at Barcelona, and basically we were just absolute rocks, the pair of them. And yeah, as Rich said, she can play fullback, she can play centre back, she can even play in midfield if we needed her to. And yeah, the two iconic moments, the PSG game and the penalties at Lyon at Stamford Bridge. Just a solid, brilliant player who, yeah, just played, did what was asked of her and did it so well that she often went under the radar. You just took for granted that if she played, you were going to get a solid 7, 8, 9 out of 10 performance from her. And there was nothing to worry about. And to be fair, exactly the same thing happened on Sunday. She came on and she was just there. She didn't make any mistakes. She did what the basics really well. And you knew that it didn't matter if she was going to come on. The performance was going to stay the same. Yeah, just absolute solid professional and will be definitely, as you said earlier, will be missed.
Yeah, I am going to get us all to pick our favourite moments out from all three who are leaving us. But you know, that PSG goal, you know, was a bit before my time following the women's team, you know, coming in sort of end of November in 2020, starting the podcast when I started sort of really following the team. So, you know, for me, it's got to be the last-minute penalty against Lyon. just everything that was on the line, the weight to take it and everything, and for her to score that was absolutely huge. Rich, if you could pick a moment, which one are you going to go for?
I mean, I probably will pick, you know, as an individual moment, the first Marin penalty, because obviously there was so much riding on it. But just that whole period when she came back into the team, the Marinaissance, you know, one of the best puns anyone's ever come up with, you know, because she, once she came back in, you know, she was solid the rest of the season, and, you know, she played great in both legs against Barcelona last season as well. You know, it was a real, you know, it was a real sort of showing of, you know, her, you know, sort of back at her best. And, but yeah, the penalty, the penalty to equalise the tie has got to be that.
Yeah. Sophie, how about yourself?
I think probably the PSG goal, but there's another moment that stands out for me that I'm pretty sure it's her, but I'm doubting myself now, is the Conti Cup final at Forest. 89th minute, she's the person, Sam Kerr runs down the wing, keeps hold of the ball, she passes it back to Marin, who then could shoot, but she spots Beth England running up, and it's Marin that passes to Beth to knock the ball into the back of the net to score. I'm sure it's Marin. I'm going to make a fool of myself now if it's not. But I think that's a classic Marin moment as well. Just being there in sort of like the one trophy we hadn't won at Chelsea, and she's there to create the chance to win the game. So, yeah, so I think that's just to be a bit different. If that is Marin, I'm going to go for that moment.
Okay, we'll try and find out. I don't know how easy that's going to be. But as we go, because it's just bringing up the time that Arsenal beat us 3-1, which isn't very helpful, even though I put 2019. We will move on to Fran Kirby, Chelsea's leading goal scorer in the WSL era. I mean, Rich, what can you say about Fran Kirby that's not been said before?
I think I would have already covered it so many times in the past. But she's our record goal scorer. Pretty sure that's correct. And she spent a large amount of time, especially during the time where I got interested or started watching the women's team full time, you know, either out with illness or injury. But, you know, one of the most technically gifted players that's ever come through Chelsea. If you go back and look at, you know, just her top 10 goals will be, you know, will rival, you know, any players that's ever, you know, that's ever played the game. I guess that's a new angle on it, I can now say. But yeah, just an incredible talent. And, you know, it's a shame she did have, you know, or has had the illness that she had. And the injuries that she's had as well, because, you know, she could have pushed that top goal scorer number to a figure that, you know, no one could catch potentially. And she should have, you know, she could have also potentially been, you know, someone who'd be crowned, you know, a Ballon d'Or winner. I think she had the talent for it.
Yeah, before I ask you, Sophie, I'll read this from the BBC Sport website. England tapped home a fine ball across the face of goal for Marin Miolda for her second goal of the game to seal victory in front of a competition record crowd of 6,743 in Nottingham. So he was right. It was Marin Miolda with the assist for Beth England. So we'll let that one stand. But moving on to Fran Kirby, you know, who, despite, as Rich said, lost huge chunks of her career to illness and injury, still managed a fantastic Chelsea career, you know, all-time WSL record goal scorer, European Cup, European Championship winner with England, multiple WSLs, multiple FA Cups, League Cups. You know, she's done it all, and one of the best to ever do it.
Yeah, definitely. She was, I think, as I said in my latest article for the Chronicle, I said that her signing for Chelsea was one of the pinch me I'm dreaming moments that Emma Hayes had created, because at the time Chelsea weren't an Arsenal or even a Man City, and yet Fran Kirby signed for Chelsea over Arsenal and Man City. I remember watching her for England. I was watching Chelsea at that point as well, not on the, mainly sort of like through highlights, not actually going to see them live. And I remember watching her for England and just thinking, wow, what a brilliant player. It would be amazing if she signed for Chelsea. And lo and behold, at the end of the World Cup, she signs for Chelsea. I go to the FA Cup final in 2015. She was cup tied, so she couldn't play. But just seeing her walking around with the players and taking it all in, I was like, she's going to be a special player for us. She really is. And then 3 years later, watching her take the 2018 cup final by the scruff of the neck and scoring fantastic goal at the end we were at. They're probably sort of like three of my favourite Fran memories. The Bayern Munich semi-final game that unfortunately we all had to watch on telly because, and the Torres moment, as I called it, but that's unfair on Fran calling it a Torres moment. It was a Fran moment to sort of run from the halfway line. And there was another one in COVID against Arsenal, I think, where she ran and sort of ran and ran and ran and ran and scored and then went down with cramp. Yeah, phenomenal player. From all accounts, a ridiculous desire to win, which I think sometimes comes out on the pitch with frustration with herself and other players, which I think doesn't always endear her to people. But what does it matter? She's a winner. And yeah, the first name I had on the back of an England shirt, that's for sure. And someone I'm going to miss seeing putting on a Chelsea shirt and seeing her play for Chelsea. Yeah, just brilliant. And the relationship she built up with Sam Kerr in that 21-22 season, the Kirby season. Again, unfortunately, we didn't get to see much of it live, if any of it live, because of COVID. Just the magic that they had between them. If that had been able to be carried on, wow, yeah. Just what can you say? There's no words that can do Fran justice. Really, she's a brilliant, brilliant player, and someone I'm so grateful I've got to see play live for both England and Chelsea.
Yeah, I was trying to think of like questions to ask, and it's like, what can you ask that don't sound stupid? Because she's that good. But Rich, you know, this over the course of this season, we spoke about Fran a lot, and you know, about a downward trajectory. You know, which, you know, after the levels you reach, and you know, as you get older, it's to be expected that you can't reach those levels again anymore. And although it is, you know, sad to lose a player and a person like her, it does feel like, you know, this is the right time where you're not thinking, oh, she stayed the season too long. She gets that fabulous farewell, and that's what, you know, she really does deserve.
I think if a few months ago I suggested that, you know, maybe having her on for another year, you know, would be okay. But I think in that time period, yeah, it just, you know, I think, well, weirdly enough, on Sunday, that was probably her best performance for, you know, for some time, you know, sort of coming off the bench and, you know, just being in positions where, you know, Bristol City defenders didn't want to be in. And, you know, as Sophie said, you know, having three pre-assists in the game, you know, still sort of, you know, still got the footballing brain, which, you know, allows her to be, you know, a couple of yards ahead of everyone else. But yeah, I do think it is the right time now. Yeah, and just going back to that 2021 season with Sam and her, and you know, I mean, that's a partnership that, I mean, Chelsea having had a lot of strike partnerships in my lifetime that have been very good, but I mean, that one's close to Hasselbank and Kjaersen for how good they were that season. It might even be better because of, you know, they won the league, they got to a Champions League final, they won every domestic trophy. They were unbelievable together when they played together. But yeah, I do think now is the right time, and I don't know what you know, her plans are next. I still think she could play in the WSL, but you know, I don't know what her plans are. I mean, the Surrey Builders, you know, also put up their, you know, their sort of gratitude to her and Marin. Sure, that was very funny. So yeah, because so, obviously they're doing their house up. Yeah, I still think she could do a job somewhere in the WSL. And, luckily there are a few teams sort of around London still. Maybe she'll be back at Kings Meadow this time or next season as an opponent, which will feel very weird, but she'll get a great reception, as will Marin.
Yeah, what I've heard is Crystal Palace for her and Marin, of course, just started their extension with Surrey Builders, who obviously doing fantastic work at their house. They're very pleased. But yeah, don't seem to be moving too far away from Chelsea. And we'll be back, of course, with Palace in the WSL next season, we believe. Sophie, a simple question for me, is she Chelsea's GOAT?
Yes. Yeah, definitely. Definitely our all-time best player. A lot of people say Katie Chapman. My first favourite player was Eni Aluku, but Fran soon surpassed her. Yeah, I think if Sam had remained fully fit this season, I think she probably will have lost the all-time goal scorer. However, I think depending on how long Sam is out for, she could retain that until probably. I think Aggie will be the person that takes it off of her. If Aggie stays around and keeps playing the way she's playing, then Aggie will be the become the all-time Chelsea goal scorer, which would be brilliant. A player through the academy coming through to take it off the previous GOAT would be something special. But yeah, I think she's definitely the player she is, has been, and everything she has helped create and win for Chelsea, she's got to be definitely the GOAT.
Yeah, I think so too. Rich always used to say that, if you're looking at the most important signing for Emma Hayes, it was G, given when it happened and it put Chelsea on the map. But I think when you actually look back at it, I think you have to say that getting Fran Timmins over Arsenal and Man City at that time pushed us to a new level, and obviously they won the first sort of silverware with her at the club, and then on to dominate English football for the next sort of 5 years, as we've seen, with her sort of leading the line, leading the charge, and she's got the record to show for it. And as Sophie says, she is our greatest ever player.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. It was a needle shifter when we signed her, as Sophie said. I do remember her signing for us. I wasn't sort of following the team sort of full time then, but I did sort of, I had obviously heard of her beforehand because I did watch the 2015, World Cup. Absolutely our greatest ever player, and our greatest ever signing, quite obviously, that goes with that as well. Can't really say any more. I've already said it.
No. Talking of, just to mention, the next generation, she came from Reading, as did Amy Claypole, who was coached by Fran as a young kid at Reading, before she moved to Chelsea. She obviously spent last season on loan at Lewis, and I think she'll be a top player for Chelsea, and maybe, that could be, the thing for Chelsea, sign a player from Reading and go and become your all-time leading goal scorer in the future. But we'll see, of course, Aggie as well. As Sophie mentioned, the front runner right now, at least anyway. Two great players who we'll miss very much. And then we've got to move on to the boss, Emma Hayes, departing for the USA after 12 incredible years. And I know, Sophie, that she doesn't like to take all the credit, but she has been the driving force behind getting Chelsea from where they were in 2012 to where they are today in 2024.
Yeah, definitely. You've only got to listen to the players, the way the players talk about her, the players that played for her then that she signed, the players that play for her now. Millie Bright, who's sort of like been there from nearly the start all the way through, and how much she says the club has changed and that Emma has been the driving force behind that change. And because she drove Chelsea to be better, it meant that other clubs had to step up and be better to challenge Chelsea. So not only did she drive the standards at Chelsea, as a result of that, she's driven the standards across the whole of women's football in England, which not many people can say that, if anybody. And yeah, that's just a phenomenal legacy, regardless of what happens for the rest of the season. That's the legacy she leaves behind, as well as the adage she has that she'll only start, that she signs people that are good humans as well as good players, and that all the players say that she looks after you first as a human rather than a player. And you can't, that sort of person is very difficult to replace. And yeah, just as we said about Fran, what more can you say? She's just for me, she's the greatest ever Chelsea manager, male or female team.
Yeah, well, without a shadow of a doubt, in my opinion. And Rich, following on from what Sophie was saying, you know, Emma's loss in many ways will be felt, you know, off the pitch, because it's easy to find good coaches that know tactics and can set teams up to play well and play good football. But to find, you know, a manager that understands a culture, an attitude, professionalism that Emma's built is, you know, so much, you know, so important for Chelsea. And, you know, it's really important that the new manager continues the culture and the legacy that Emma's built. And if they don't, I think they're going to fail pretty quickly.
Yeah, it's difficult to know who exactly to kind of compare what she's achieved with Chelsea, given where or what she started with. I don't think you can compare it. The closest I can get on the men's like side of things is Bill Shankly at Liverpool. And you know, they managed to continue the winning culture after he left, and obviously you're hoping sort of for the same sort of effect when, you know, whoever the new manager is comes in, but yeah, you know, you can't, yeah, you know what she's achieved from going from like the sort of the like the portable offices, I think she sort of said at the start, you know, having to, you know, try and sort of like dry out pitches, I think, herself with her, you know, with her team and you know, her and Paul, you know, to event, you know, and, you know, Millie sort of talked about, and, you know, on one of the podcasts recently about, you know, how the food's changed, you know, and, you know, going to like a fully professionalized environment. And, you know, it's not just for Chelsea, it's across the entire league. And, you know, Emma's been, you know, pounding the table, for these players for so long that, you know, the game's, you know, in a pretty good place at the moment. There's obviously still things that we can improve on, but, you know, she's, I mean, it's, you know, it's silly to say because it's so obvious, but, you know, she's left the club in such a better place than when the one that she picked it up from, that, yeah, you can't really, I don't think you can compare it to anything else. And yeah, I just want to echo what Sophie said. She's Chelsea's greatest ever manager. Greater than Mourinho, greater than anyone else.
Yeah, I mean, we spoke to Matt Beard last summer. The episode's available on our Patreon. When we spoke to him about the club, obviously Roman was the owner at the time, and there was a sense of frustration from him that the club just had no interest in the women's team, really. And, you know, he spoke about, he wrote the application form to join the WSL. Himself, it wasn't something that the club did. He, as the manager, put down why Chelsea should play in the WSL, and obviously got us to that stage. And that's, you know, that's what Emma took over. You know, an amateur basically football team that was basically semi-professional at the time. We heard her talk about, you know, the groundsman turning the lights off while the team was still in the building, having to go and tell them that they're still there working because they were just, you know, not thought of at all. To what we see today, and, you know, I suppose, Sophie, that legacy, and we spoke about this after we lost to Barcelona, UEFA, sorry, always had to say the wrong team. We lost to UEFA in the Champions League. Her legacy is so much more important than any trophy, is, you know, what we see a football club and women's football in England as well is got to be worth more than any trophy could ever manage.
Oh, yeah, definitely. It's a legacy that she's sort of created for the players, but I also think for other managers in the game. You hear of sort of like Carla Ward, Kelly Chambers when she was at Reading, Other managers, Tony Roxby, she obviously took under her wing, brought her back into Chelsea, brought into Chelsea. Even sort of the conversations she's had with Matt Beard, with Nick Cushing when he was at City. It's not just players and sort of Chelsea. She's created a culture and a legacy for it. It's other managers out there as well. And I think it's sort of a bit poignant and a bit sad that this season we've lost two very good female managers from the WSL, both of them citing work-life balance and the need to spend time with their families as to why they've either moved to the American women's national team in the case of Emma, or just taking a break from the game in the case of Carla Ward. And Emma sort of said, I think in a post-match press conference in the Bristol City game, is we've got to come up, or the game has got to come up with ways to support female coaches who have families, because otherwise we're not going to have any more of them, or there's going to be fewer and fewer and fewer of them. And we need female coaches in the women's game to drive it forward, because I believe that female coaches drive it forward in a different way to how male coaches will. You've only got to look at Serena Wiegmann in England and what she's done there. And Emma's a key architect of that. And to lose her, I hope we don't lose that side of her from the women's game in England. I hope she still stays in touch with people and drives things forward in that way, like I'm sure she will in America. Because I think it's that we're going to miss. It's the press conferences, it's the things she says, the meaningful interviews, the stories she tells, the causes she fights for, that the game's going to miss as much as her tactics, as her way of winning, of how we as fans are going to miss her. The game is going to miss her in a big way as well. And I hope, as I say, she continues to fight those causes on behalf of women's football in America and in England.
Yeah, I think what we will see more of actually is supporters of other football teams start to show appreciation for what she's done for the game, because she's no longer the Chelsea manager. It'll be easier for them to do that, and I think we'll start to see that as the months progress from Emma leaving. And I think we should also mention Stuart Searle, who's a very important member of the background team. And with every great manager that's been in the game, men's or women, behind them is an assistant manager who's just as important. And Denise Reading has been that for Emma, as she spoke about in a speech after the game. And Rich, their influence on the team shouldn't be underestimated either.
Trusted lieutenants. And you can I think it was kind of said as well that, if the way sort of like the coaching staff has built and deals with sort of player management is some players can go to Emma, but then others speak to Denise, and others and especially the goalkeepers will be speaking to Stuart. And yeah, it's a shame that we're going to be losing Stuart. Obviously, we kind of knew that Denise was going to be going with Emma. I think that was sort of pretty obvious given her nationality. Yeah, it's a shame that Stuart's going as well, because I think he's done, a really good job, with the goalkeepers, especially. We can kind of see, the improvements that, Hampton's had. She's come in, and she's, I know Musovic started on Sunday, but, she's kind of held that position since. And, the work, she's done with Zacharia and Anne as well, and everyone else before her, beforehand. So, shame. I kind of suspected it when I saw the LinkedIn post last week. I did ask a journalist about it, and they seemed to suggest that he was going to be staying. So it was a little bit of a slight shock that on Sunday, Emma said that he'd be going as well. A bit of a shame.
Yeah, what a
I
way
think.
to find out LinkedIn job adverts. But yeah, Sophie, got over to you.
Stuart will be a really big miss. I've heard Kylie Telford talk about him. Hannah Hampton cited him as one of the reasons why she wanted to come to Chelsea to work with him. I believe he's the best women's goalkeeping coach in the game. And I think it'll be interesting to see whether our goalkeepers maintain their standards when he's not there, or if they hopefully they'll carry on improving because they'll bring in somebody who's learnt from Stuart, who knows things. But that would be an interesting factor for me next season is how the goalkeepers perform without Stuart there. I'm intrigued to know if he's going to the States with Emma or if he's just taking a break from the game. I don't know. I hope he doesn't end up at another club because they've gained a really good coach. But yeah, we'll have to wait and see, I guess.
Yeah, I used to watch Stuart when I was a young boy at Carson Athletic. Good goalkeeper in his own right, which shows why he's a good goalkeeping coach. You know, I wonder if he wants to make a step up himself into coaching management. We'll see. I'm sure Emma would love to have him in the United States, and you know, it's an opportunity not many would turn down, I suppose. This one's, I think, is a bit more difficult, is to pick your favourite Emma Hayes moment, because there's so many iconic Emma Hayes moments. The purring at the FA Cup final press conference, trying to fight the players when we scored the last minute goal against Aston Villa, springs to mind. Rich, if you can, what are you going to go for?
Oh, I was going to go for that still photo because the video she's not doing it at all. It's just one of the most perfectly timed photos between a manager and a player you'll ever get. And it cracks me up every time I see it. So I'm going to pick that one because that was the one that instantly came to mind.
Yeah, I do love that photo so much. I don't know, she's trying to punch someone.
I think it's Erin, I think. Or Erin's trying to hold her
Erin's
back.
Erin's trying to hold her back. She's trying to punch somebody.
Yeah.
As you say, whoever took that photo deserves a photography award. I don't know what that is, but is it the poop? Well, that's the book one, isn't it? Whatever they give awards for photos, that should win it. Sophie, what about you?
I've got a couple that are linked, and they're not directly Chelsea, but they are Chelsea-related. One is the end of the Euros game where Fran, Jess and Millie see her on the touchline. And she just embraces them all and says congratulations. And she's in tears and they're in tears. And to me, that just sums up the relationship between her and her players. And then building on that, I think it's the end of the FA of the World Cup final when, again, she's at the side of the pitch or just afterwards. And Millie sees her and she just gives Millie a huge, great hug. And they just sort of stay hugging for like, I don't know, it seems forever. It's a sort of relationship, again, that just shows the relationship she has with her players, how much they mean to her and how much she means to them. I think those two images at the end of big England finals, one successful, one not successful, are what sort of, they're sort of two key moments for me. They're not the typical ones you think of her, but they're ones that stand out for me.
Yeah, I'm going to go for full-time versus Bayern Munich in the semi-final when she... You know, the emotion of getting to the Champions League final, we spoke about this in the build-up to Barcelona. You know, the emotion seemed different this time. You know, almost a vindication of her as a football manager, which, you know, was probably personal rather than, you know, a public view of her. You know, obviously she's very highly rated, but I think for her personally making that, and you see that in the emotion coming out, and you know, it's a human side to her as well. Perhaps, you know, a vulnerability that we don't see very often from football managers. But, you know, I think you could pick, you know, any moment out of the hat and it would be, you know, a great moment and stuff we are going to miss. And, you know, that emotion that, again, Sophie showed last night in the video message that they played on the big screen in the letter that she wrote, and especially when you could hear her voice start to break.
Yeah, definitely. That really showed how much it meant to her, the when her voice sort of started breaking about when she was talking through that letter. That was a really beautiful way for her to say what she wanted to say, because she's right, she probably wouldn't have got it all out if she tried to do it on Sunday. So, yeah, I think that just, if you haven't seen it or watched it, I think it's on the website or even on one of the on the social media feeds. Go and watch it because it's brilliant. Very well put together and very well narrated by Emma.
Yeah, it really was. It was a moment. And Importantly, Rich, you know, we spoke about legacies. It was inside a sold-out stadium again that saw it. And when you talk about legacies, you know, what she turned up at in 2012 to, you know, Wytcheef Park and Stamford Bridge at Barcelona, and then again at King's Meadow, you know, this is the house that she's built.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's the, I guess the semi-final against Barcelona, that really is the sort of the yardstick of sort of how far it's come under her. I don't know what the attendance would have been of her first home game in 2012, but you know, to get to you know a crowd of nearly 40,000 all paying to watch that team, yeah, that's that might be the biggest sort of from here, from then to now, yardsticks that you can kind of show, you know, this is how far it's come. Never mind sort of the trophies, and sort of everything else. You know, it's the amount of interest that's now in the team. You know, I jumped along for the ride in 2018, and I'm happy I did. Should have done it earlier. But yeah, that's probably the biggest yardstick you could use.
Yeah, obviously building, you know, the one club, you know, messaging that we see so often is from her. And like you, a bit later than you jumping on the Chelsea women bandwagon, and you know, likewise, wish I'd done so a lot sooner. Though we probably would be on episode 1,015, whatever we're probably on now, 135, rather than that. But there we are. Sadly, that is all we've got time for this evening. We will be back because we're not in the FA Cup final next Thursday, which is the 16th of May, to review the Tottenham Hotspur game. We'll be joined by Simon Kingman and Matt Ball. So hopefully, I know their curse has ended, so should be talking about a win, and Chelsea one win away from a fifth consecutive WSL title. Now, if you've liked what we do, and I spoke about that Mad Beard interview, that is all available on our Patreon. Patreon enables us to do cool stuff like Mixlr live shows, Zoom meetings that we don't have to log off from, and the editing software. On there, you'll find stuff like interviews with Tony Farmer, the man that created Chelsea FC Women, George Michaelis, who was the Chelsea manager in 2002 to 2005. Matt Beard, and one with journalist Paul Langan as well, about Emma Hayes's time in charge, celebrating the 30 years of Chelsea Women. And there'll be more stuff coming this summer. All the money goes towards the show, so paying for the stuff I mentioned, and of course our community campaign, Future Ballers, which gives football boots to young girls. So if you do enjoy our content, then please consider signing up for that. The link is in the description box. You can follow the show on social media at WentToMo Kingsmeadow on Instagram, at Mo Kingsmeadow on Twitter. I'm at Dean Mears, Sophie is at Traveller74, and Rich is at Bates in the place. Sophie, thank you as always for joining us. Quite the game and, you know, after party to get through.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I enjoyed reliving Sunday and the goals. And yeah, look forward to the next two games, and hopefully can talk again when we're hopefully fifth consecutive time champions.
Yeah, of course. Rich, always a pleasure, and you know, a good time to support Chelsea, I suppose.
Yeah, definitely on Sunday. Didn't think at the start of the day I didn't expect we'd, you know, both teams would combine to score 13 and concede zero. But yeah, no, it was a great day, and you know, now it's back in our hands again. It's, you know, we've got that second chance. Now I've got to take it. But yeah, good to be on the show again.
Yeah, hoping, of course, for the perfect farewell for Emma, Marin, and of course, Fran. Thanks to those that have listened along in Mixlr. Sorry I haven't brought you into the show, but it's long enough as it is tonight. As I said, we'll be back next Thursday, the 16th. Until then, from Kingsmeadow to a fifth WSL title, keep the blue flag flying.
It's the 90th minute. All your mates around. You've got your McNuggets share boxes ready to go. Your mate's already got booked for double dipping, and you steal the last nugget, snatching all 3 points. Perfect! Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. You in? At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.